Comics in Space.
Welcome to the first episode of Comics in Space, everybody, the podcast where we talk about comics that happen in space. This is the first episode. We're going to be covering some awesome 1970s Marvel comics. We're going to be covering Jim Starlin's classic from the Bronze Age, The Warlock War. Joining me today is the awesome Darren Generally. He is the host of the Superpowered Fancast, and he runs the website, thesuperpoweredfancast.com. Darren, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent, man. I am pumped to talk about these comics. I read them a little while ago, and I've just been super pumped to talk about them. I'm not generally as huge a fan of the Bronze Age as I am of more modern stuff, but this blew me away, man.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, once you get past, like, I'll be honest with you, it is exposition heavy.
It's wordy.
Every issue is Exposition City, and every next issue basically retells you what happened in the one before. And it's not even like a little nod. It's like, hey, let me recap exactly what you may have just read.
Yeah, in three or four pages too. Right. Like not quickly.
Exactly.
No. So yeah. But this was really cool, and I didn't know much about Adam Warlock. I'd read, you know, everybody's read quite a bit about Thanos. He's the big bad of Marvel, you know, and he's going to be the big bad of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I wanted to know about his kind of opposite number that was created, and that's Adam Warlock. He got teased in the most recent Guardians of the Galaxy movie in one of the post-credit scenes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, who is this guy? I've read a few comics with him in it, but I don't know him real well. So this is a guy that was created on Earth in some kind of cocoon and then spent some time on Counter-Earth, which is exactly like the Earth, except it's on the other side of the sun, so nobody else knows about it.
Right.
And so he failed in his mission to protect his friends on Counter-Earth, so he decided, I'm going to go travel the spaceways. And these comics open up. He finds this woman who's running away from, what is it? Is it the Universal Church of Truth?
Yeah.
And man, the Universal Church of Truth is a really heavy Spanish Inquisition analog. Like, they're chasing this woman down. They're like, she's a heretic. She must die.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, he again fails to protect her. And, man, I got to say, you know, failing to protect your friends and seeing them die, that really sucks. But this guy goes on pages of mopes.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost it is weird to just all that exposition about how much he can't do something. It's like I think like one or two pages you feel for the guy, but after that, then it's just, you know,
we got it. You've got confidence issues,
right? It's like, you're just not good at this. It's like we get it.
Oh man. And then so we also get right away that he's got the soul gem in his forehead. Now, I'm not 100% sure how that ended up there. It was just kind of there when he started. So
no, he was actually given it by the High Evolutionary, which
the High Evolutionary did give it to him. Okay.
Yeah, which I still don't understand, but you know.
Yeah, the High that's a whole nother podcast talking about the High Evolutionary. Mm-hmm. But this is the guy that sent Adam to Counter-Earth. But we're not going to need to talk about Counter-Earth. That doesn't really play in much in this story arc. He definitely, so he sees this woman. She's killed by the acolytes of the Universal Church of Truth. And he learns that they are followers of the Magus. Or is it the Magus? The Magus?
Well, I've heard it pronounced Magus.
Magus. That's like better. That sounds way cooler. But so he's like, okay, who's the Magus? And then all of a sudden the Magus appears to him and just completely fucks with his head.
Yeah, and it's not even the fact that he just fucks with his head. It's almost like he just, you know, basically just reveals everything up front. It's just like there's almost no time between who is the Magus and, oh, that's who the Magus is. Like,
yeah.
It's like it doesn't, with all that exposition, you'd think they'd find a way to build to something, to build to that tension.
Yeah, and you know, the way we're starting this off, it kind of sounds like there are definitely things to be critical about this, but I, like I said, there are a lot of things, like you're saying, with the reveal of who the Magus is like at the end of the first issue, and this is like a 16 issue arc or something.
Oh, it goes on so long, but it is fun. I'm not saying it's not fun. I'm just saying is that it is something that, you know, they could have, with what they were going for, they may, if they had taken their time, they could have ramped up the tension a little bit more.
Right. And so what they reveal is that the Magus is actually one in the same person with Adam Warlock. And if you look at it, you can kind of almost figure it out even before they say it.
Yeah.
Because they both look exactly alike, except the Magus has an afro, whereas Adam Warlock has like feathered 80s hair. I don't even know how to describe it.
He definitely has a Farrah Fawcett do, and I ended up calling the Magus like Afro Warlock because it just fit. Adam Warlock, Afro Warlock.
That is way better than calling him the Magus every time. So exactly. I moved to call him Afro Warlock as many times as we remember to in this podcast. But so Adam Warlock goes on and he tracks down a ship of the Magus that belongs to the Universal Church of Truth, and he attacks the ship and immediately gets his ass kicked by the lasers on the ship and winds up a prisoner. It's just like one issue how he like frees the prisoners on the ship. There's a bunch of other prisoners of the Universal Church of Truth. One of them is my favorite character of this entire series, Pip the motherfucking troll.
Yeah. Yeah, Pip is fun. Like that.
I don't even know how to describe him. He's always got a stogie. He's always smoking a stogie, like where he finds a stogie on a prison ship.
Which is weird because he has no pants. He has no pants, is a prisoner, yet always has a cigar in his mouth. That's something. Like that's a power in and of itself.
And is always hitting on every breed of alien lady that he comes across too.
Thank you. But again, that's probably what the whole no pants thing is.
Yeah,
why stand on ceremony?
We could almost do a whole separate podcast on some of the imagery that they don't mention in context, but yep. You notice every time you read it, like Afro Warlock and Pip not wearing pants, and among other things.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's like I said, and I'm not shitting on it at all. It's fun. It's definitely fun for the time period that it was written in, but you know, it's from a
sense. It also has a lot of the foibles of the time period that it was written in, a lot of the traps that they fell into back then.
Yeah, I think that was part of the, you know, the flowery language from the previous age, where everything was hey true believers and blah blah blah, and you know, and yeah, it still kind of retains that mindset, which is, you know, which is fine from a nostalgia perspective, but maybe 3-4 issues in can get a little grating.
Yeah, definitely. And I think about 3 or 4 issues in is also I started to get annoyed when I was reading them, but then it really does pick up. So Adam Warlock frees the prisoners on this ship, and he takes like a smaller ship that is docked in this ship. He sends the prisoners on their way with the prison ship, but then he and Pip the Troll fly to the homeworld of the Universal Church of Truth, and they're going to go confront the Magus. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they spend like a whole issue just getting to the Magus at that point. There's this whole other thing going on with the matriarch, who is, you know, like the Magus' second in command. But they spend like a whole other issue on that, which is kind of an unnecessary issue. Like they could have very easily pulled out like the whole thing with the prisoners.
Whole trial. Yeah, that whole trial sequence was just.
Okay, let me talk about the trial real quick, because I liked the trial a lot. Well, it was absurd.
He kicked the lips, dude. Come on. He kicked his lips with feet, and he kicked them. And that was a funny panel. But it just, in and of itself, I was just like, oh, come on. And he shut the eye shut. There you go.
Right. So he confronts the matriarch, and she's like, oh, no, we've been waiting for you, and drops him through a trap door. And he's in this, like, crazy, I don't know, sci-fi channel version of Alice in Wonderland trial mm-hmm. where this big monster named Krator, who looks hilarious, is the judge. A bunch of faceless mannequins are the jury, and a big, like, set of lips with feet and eyeballs is the opposing lawyer. Yeah. It's so funny.
I will not deny how fun it is. It is absolutely fun.
Yeah, I don't know that it actually adds much to the story, but
well, not at all. But it is fun.
Yeah, so once they pronounce him guilty, it's a big show trial, whatever. I did like one scene in it where they call like the first witness, and the first witness is like, yeah, I'll testify. You guys are the frauds, and points to the judge and the jury. And he just yells, silence the prisoner, and they disintegrate him. I thought that was a cool scene. But yeah, once they pronounce the guilty verdict and everything, they put Adam Warlock in the mask that makes him see clowns.
Yeah. The clown issue.
The clown issue. The whole issue is that clowns.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? Cosmic level event. Clowns. Does that.
Yeah, really. And I honestly, like, I couldn't, like, keep reading that. I kept skimming it to the parts where the actual cool thing happened in that issue, because that's the same issue with the first appearance of Gamora.
And I'm literally thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, I got to push through this. But there's still in the back of my head, I'm like, are clowns still scary in the future? Like, because is future Adam Warlock afraid of clowns? Because that's just weird to me. But okay.
Well, so they've got like the sci-fi It.
Yeah, exactly. They're all Pennywise.
Although these clowns in this issue, they're not scary clowns. They're like actual clowns. They're like trying to be funny.
Right.
I didn't get the clowns. Like, I got what they were doing. They had a mask that was messing with his reality and made him think he was where he wasn't. But having clowns at that place.
I'm just saying that was a choice. That was something. That was someone in editorial that was like, you know what would be awesome in this scene? Clowns.
Well, I mean, at that point, like, my other option would be his inner demons, but he'd already fought them twice at this point in four issues.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, just from a creative standpoint, there are so many other places you can go than clowns, but we'll leave it at that, because
so many more
about it now. It's like 40 something years old.
But we do get Gamora, and aside from some strange dialogue that we run into throughout this series, it's almost essentially the same Gamora we know. She's the deadliest woman in the galaxy. She is on a mission to take out the people she thinks need taken out. It's almost a fully formed Gamora, and that's not something we see a lot in early 70s issues.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. And that's one of the things that I found refreshing, because to be honest with you, again, like you've had going through all of these issues with someone, you know, with Adam, who I'm just going to put it out there, just is not capable. Like, he has all the power and none of the skill. It's good to see, like, Gamora just kind of come in and say, hey, you know what? Let me take care of this, because I know how. So, like, that was interesting to see. And I like the fact that, you know, the relationship between them is not cut and dry. I mean, it's like she was there to, you know, she's either there to help him or kill him. It's going to be one of the two.
Right, and she makes it pretty clear that she's after the Magus when she befriends Pip, but you almost don't believe her, and she's definitely got ulterior motives, because she is talking to her master a few times, and it's not revealed until later who Gamora's master is.
Right.
One thing I did like, I really did like the interactions between her and Pip. Like, she's clearly using Pip to try and, like, get to the Magus. And she, I don't want to say she's humoring him because she's not really. She's just kind of ignoring all the times he's, like, hitting on her and talking about how powerful he is. But he's just a fuck little troll.
Right.
But yeah, I really enjoyed, you know, the introduction, and they go rescue Adam Warlock, but then they are confronted, and we finally get to see everybody confront the Magus.
Yeah, I'm still going with Afro Warlock.
But Afro, okay. Right? I got to remember that. So I've got in my notes here. I've got Magus versus Warlock round one goes to Magus. Yeah, Magus pretty much kicks the shit out of Adam Warlock.
Yeah. I mean, and the worst part about this is that, again, you basically, like, you've had kind of your introduction to Adam Warlock in his solo adventure. And even with the, you know, introduction of the additional characters, with the introduction of Pip, with the introduction of Gamora, I still never really got much from Adam Warlock other than he complains a lot.
Yeah. Not only does he complain a lot out loud and in thought bubbles.
Yeah.
But then the narration gives him an assist and helps him complain. Right. but yeah, so they give the history of the Magus, and this is where they should have revealed who the Magus is. They reveal that the Magus is a future version of Adam Warlock. He's Adam Warlock from the future, and that he remembers everything Adam does, but Afro Warlock traveled to the past, and that's how he's the leader of the god of the Universal Church of Truth. And Adam has a big problem with this. He's like, I could never become evil like you. And I think it's really well written how Magus like laughs at him for saying that. And at one point, Adam yells, no, I could never do that. And at the exact same time, it's like a split panel with half of being Adam Warlock and half being Afro Warlock. And they're both yelling the same thing at the same time while Adam is like horrified and Magus has like a smirk on his face. And I thought that was really, really well done.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that too. I think the groundwork for that was laid well with him not being able to really control the soul gem. Like, I think that I think those moments really did a lot to allow for this kind of drama to take place, to where, yeah, he's saying what he can't do or what he'll never do, but you literally are seeing him lose control. And lose control, like, step by step, mm-hmm. basically on a journey to becoming the Magus in this arc.
Right. And in order, so in the story, in order for Adam Warlock to become the Magus, Adam has to be put back into his cocoon. And the person to do this is this strange story device called the In-Betweener, who will be developed more later in Marvel Cosmic, but at this point, he's just a dude that Magus is going to sick on Adam Warlock.
Mm-hmm. I'm literally just waiting for a character called the Expositioner, because that's basically just what he was. It's just he, you know, hey, this plot point needs to be addressed. With, here I am.
Exactly. And so okay, so round two, in my notes I've got round two MC Escher tag. Because Afro Warlock tells Adam, he's like, okay, it's not time for me to call the In-Betweener yet, so let's play a tag. And then all of a sudden, the art is like this crazy M.C. Escher space Dr. Seuss shit.
It's awesome, because I've always loved Starlin's artwork, so I'm, you know.
Exactly. It's really, really cool. And it was just so random. He's like, so in the meantime, let's play tag. And it's like Adam's trying to avoid him, trying to get away. And the Magus is just like warping the reality around him. And it's really, really beautiful art. It's just a strange scene, though.
Yeah.
But But then one thing happens that that the Magus doesn't account for, and Thanos shows up. Thanos is Gamora's master that she had been talking to, and Thanos shows up, tries to rescue Adam Warlock, and Magus just sends his hordes against, like, all of the church, Universal Church, against the two of them. And the battle scene goes on for a good half issue, and it's so good.
Yeah. And, you know, even, you know, going into it knowing what you know about Thanos, it is a great issue in that regard. Like, you do get to see some really good action, and I think him being introduced that way is an effective plot point. It's an effective plot point. I enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think Thanos showing up, and the way he showed up, and he's all of a sudden, because he'd been introduced, he fought the Avengers before, tried to attack the entire Earth. And so him showing up on the side of the good guy is a very strange thing. And I think it was really effective, especially with the big battle. Like, he made it clear that he is there to defend Adam Warlock. It was just odd, but it really worked. And then his I like Thanos addressed Adam Warlock's constant bitching, and I've got it in my notes just listed as the price of pain speech, or the price is pain speech.
Yeah.
And it's just Thanos going on about how if you want to live your life and you want to be a hero, the price of that is pain, and you have to pay it, or you either have to get used to it and start paying the price, or you have to not be a hero and become the Magus.
Yeah, and you know that whole speech. I'm thinking about the speech from Fame. You know, if you want fame, well, fame costs. Right here is where you start paying and sweat. So yeah, those are really great speeches, and I enjoy them because you know you don't really get a whole lot of that anymore. So I think from a nostalgia perspective, again, you kind of take the good with the bad. And you take, like, the heavy exposition, but you also get the really good speeches as well. You kind of get, like, those really good character moments.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think Starlin did it really well. And as much as the art is in that Bronze Age style, and we're so used to, the beautiful art that comes out in modern comics, I think these old comics, some of them are just absolutely stunning. Some of these space battle arcs, and the one with Thanos, you know, taking on the death squad that Magus sends after him once they escape to Thanos' ship. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely stunning arc. And that brings us to the final episode of the final issue of the first arc of this, which was The Strange Death of Adam Warlock. And, man, that was a great issue. Like, that issue almost makes the entire, like, previous eight worth it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, because it is one of those things where, again, you've had to deal with Adam dealing with the duality of being both Adam and the Magus. You have to deal with with Thanos' intervention, but you also get to really see the power of the Soul Gem. And you get to see that, you know, there's going to be that there are, you know, that there are layers to this story. Like, everything is not just surface. And I kind of like how it continues and evolves.
Yeah. And so the gist of this story, it's hard to describe. The gist of this story is that while Thanos is battling the Magus back on his ship, and then Pip and Gamora are also fighting off, the hordes of the Universal Church, Adam Warlock is taken by the in-betweener, but instead of following the same path that the Magus did and going back to the cocoon and becoming evil, he chooses the path of his own death. And it's not like he's going to die right now, but in order to save his soul, he has to go to the future and steal his own soul with the Soul Gem, which, like I said, kind of hard to describe. That Jim Starlin does it much better than I do. But then he goes to the future and he sees himself at the time that he's going to die. And the future Adam Warlock says, "Oh, finally, I'm glad you've come to take me. Since I was you, like, everything I've loved has been destroyed. I embrace death." And he also mentions that it's only been a couple of months since he was, you know, since he was in the position of the younger Adam Warlock. And you're like, holy shit, like, all this happens in a couple of months.
Right.
And then Adam does. He steals the future Adam Warlock's soul, and he goes back, and then it changes history. But, man, that was a really powerful thing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think what really worked about it is the fact that there's the fact that ultimately he was going to have to confront himself, either as the Magus or at the moment when he had to make the decision to become the Magus or not. So it's interesting that it's interesting to see what he chooses, how he chooses it, and that the soul gem comes into play in the final decision. So it worked for me. I think with all the things that we kind of, you know, joke about, overall the story really works. Like, even from the transition from the Strange Tales issues to the Warlock issues, it's seamless in that the story works with each issue. Now, there are moments in it that are still just a little, you know,
absurd.
A little absurd and hokey. I mean, clowns. But overall, the story works really well.
Yeah, I think if a couple of those earlier issues, the Strange Tales issues, I almost think the four of those could have been worked into two issues.
Yeah.
And it would have improved the quality of just like the pacing of this whole story arc. But I think that's the real thing. Pacing issues and a couple absurdities aside, it really is this first arc leading up to the strange death of Adam Warlock was really, really good. And I'm so glad that I did read it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's something that was interesting to revisit, both from a story standpoint and from the standpoint of the history of the characters that we know. So it is very interesting to kind of see where that, to see that progression from, you know, a lot of exposition, huge ideas, huge speeches, to kind of where we are now with, you know, stuff like Secret Empire. So it is kind of interesting to see that change in dynamic.
Yeah, definitely. And and I think the way that it's presented with Adam's path and the whole, because a good chunk of this issue is Adam trying to navigate his life's path that he sees, not as a metaphor, but like he sees in front of him due to the in-betweener's influence. Him trying to navigate this and wrestling with the idea that, okay, this is essentially a delayed suicide, but then I won't become the Magus. And the Magus is just super evil and also way more purple than Adam. And I think it's the way that it's presented is really well. The art, again, kind of a M.C. Escher, Dr. Seuss comic books in space thing. It's so cool. And that's definitely the climax of this entire arc. But there is some falling action afterwards. And that's Thanos kind of, once Adam makes his decision, the Magus just kind of fades out of existence mid fight with Thanos. And Thanos is pumped. He can't tell Gamora how pumped he is, because his end game was exactly this. He wanted the Magus destroyed, because whether in the form of Adam Warlock or the form of the Magus, Adam is what Thanos describes as the champion of the forces of life, while Thanos is himself a self-proclaimed champion of death.
Right.
And so he is effectively made this situation such that there is no powerful enemy to confront him anymore. Nobody on the level that he is at. And so now he can go be the champion of death. And we're going to see some of that later in the second part of this arc. Do you want to take a quick break? We're about a half hour in. Do you want to take like 2 minutes?
Yeah.
And then we can we will be right back with the last with the second half of this story arc.
Cool.
Welcome back to Comics in Space. That is so much fun to do. All right, we're back with the second half of the Warlock War. Jim Starlin's kind of the kickoff to Jim Starlin's Cosmic Marvel epic that he went through for many, many years with Cosmic Marvel. You've all heard, like, you can't really join in the middle of a podcast, so I'm not going to worry about catching you up. If you're here, you've heard it.
Right.
But yeah, so after all of that really good stuff and the amazing climax to that arc, we get some comedy.
Yeah.
Like the only note I have for this entire next issue is Pip in the Pleasure Palace.
Yeah, you do get a lot of, you know, Pip trying to get laid, and that's funny in and of itself. Like, one of the things that's always been kind of that I've both admired but also been a little, you know, hinky about as far as with the cosmic stuff is that the cosmic stuff with Marvel has always been so out there that it's hard to kind of ground to get people to kind of get, I guess, the general audience to find something to hold on to. I think once they streamlined a lot of the cosmic stuff to basically just kind of focusing on Guardians, then I think they kind of brought more people into it. But I can kind of understand why a lot of the cosmic stuff didn't really have a long run, because it is a lot of different stuff you're kind of thrown in there for newbies. Mm-hmm. And even with that, I like the fact that because it's cosmic, like Starlin and the rest of them, they just kind of go for it. Like, it's almost like they can't, it's almost like they're trying to build their own worlds off of this stuff.
Yeah. And you're definitely right on that. When you get into things like the Celestials and the, oh man, what's the guy that like judges everything? I can't remember his name. Damn it. All the big,
not the Watcher, but no.
No, not the Watcher. That's going to drive me nuts. But you've got like Lord Chaos and Lord Order and like all these like embodiments of, you know, concepts that are just floating around out there. And you've got the Celestials, which are pretty much space gods and all sorts of crazy stuff out there. Yeah, they really went nuts with that stuff.
Yeah, and you find that same kind of mentality when, when Kirby went over to DC and created the New Gods and Darkseid and all that stuff. It's just like, you know what? Let me just throw every idea I have out there and, you know, and run with it.
Yeah, and I think the New Gods are, I think Kirby had a chance to like play with his ideas in Cosmic before he went over to DC.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's why the New Gods seem so much more cohesive and at least like they had a backstory, like they were well planned out. Whereas some of the Marvel Cosmic shit, you're just like, okay, there's this guy called the Inbetweener who is the agent of Lords Chaos and Order, which are giant faces that float in space and judge things. Like, okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. I think he definitely kind of said, hey, you know what, this worked, this didn't, and was able to streamline things down to a few characters. But getting back to this, I mean, it's interesting that it's interesting to just kind of see a lot of these characters that you know are really just not going to show up that much, you know, show up too often. And when they do, unfortunately, they're not going to be something that you really remember, except for, you know, people like, you know, Eros.
Right. Oh, good Lord, Eros. Have you been reading the current Thanos, by the way, the current one coming out from Marvel?
I haven't had a chance to. I've been, you know, I've been forcing my way through Secret Empire, so I haven't really gone kind of outside of that.
Man, this Thanos series is good. I thought it was gonna, because I think after like issue 7, Jeff Lemire left the book and they got a different writer. I'm not sure who's on it now, but it's still really, really good. And you get like Eros and Thane and Thanos and Nebula. It's some really good characters coming in for the series. It's a great book. I'd highly recommend it. But yeah, like you said, getting back to this, we've got a whole issue where Pip tries to hook up with a lady who is basically a courtesan on the Universal Church's homeworld.
Right.
And it ends up the reward for, you know, whatever she asked him to do ended up being like her awesome space cart and not like her hooking up with him like he was hoping for. And then after that, we get like a 3-issue arc about Barry Bauman, the Star Thief.
Yeah.
And this is one that we were talking about, like we were talking about it. What, like, there were some great ideas there, but I don't know if there was a whole lot of time spent making them cohesive.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is the thing. I mean, come on. Like, dude kind of looks like, I'm not even going to say it, but he just, there's no way that this character was designed to be sustainable past this issue.
Okay. Oh, definitely not. So, yeah, this guy, there's like a 3-issue arc, and there are some like mini adventures in the middle, but this guy is basically a human who's in a coma who, because he's in a coma, can project himself into outer space and put out stars, and he looks like some giant eyebrows in space.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's actually pretty entertaining. Like it's strange, and it's definitely like you said, it wasn't meant to have ramifications. It was meant to fill in until they could get the Avengers situation and Thanos worked out. But yeah, it was entertaining. He ran it like he got attacked. Warlock got attacked by a space shark, and then you know, he was giant for a while, and then he ran into a space mafia. There was some good little parts in there. There was definitely some good stuff. But like, yeah, not necessarily cohesive and not necessarily thought out.
Right. You're basically dealing with, you know, low rent Charles Xavier with Barry Bauman. I'm sorry. It's interesting only in the sense that you get a peek at Earth where all the previous issues, you're kind of away from it. So I mean,
yeah, not even any mention of it except for Warlock talking about it being his homeworld.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, that's actually kind of part of the story where I want, you know, that I want to see is that, you know, it's that part of him being home, and you'll get that eventually. But there seems to be almost no connection with him to Earth other than, you know, him constantly saying that's where he's from.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and like I said, there's a few good scenes. I loved it when the Star Thief threw the space shark at him. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
And you get a couple of glimpses of what's going on with some of the other characters from earlier. Like we said, there's a couple of glimpses of Pip. You get Gamora abandoning Thanos because she's found out that he's actually evil. And then she gets attacked by Drax the Destroyer, who you also know from Guardians of the Galaxy. Everybody knows Drax. This is not the fully formed Drax. He's got the same obsession with hating Thanos, but he's just kind of a force of nature with no personality at all, aside from yelling about Thanos a lot.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And I think that's, you know, when you're introducing a character like Drax, yeah, there's going to be those moments where it's just your, you know, just your basic information. And a lot of characters kind of show up that way, where they just are there as a throwaway plot point, and then they get developed later.
So. Yeah, Yeah, definitely. And then, yeah, and then, you know, we don't get much of Drax versus Gamora, just that he attacks her ship as she's flying away from Thanos, and he doesn't like her because she works for Thanos. But then we get this really weird issue, the next one on the reading order in this arc, where Adam Warlock saves Spider-Man from a spaceship, and then, like, they have a fight with some giant guy on the moon. It's bizarre.
It's not even necessarily bizarre. It's just an excuse to get Spider-Man to get Spider-Man to team up with Adam Warlock. It's probably one of the most ham-handed Marvel team-ups I've read.
Yeah, like there is no excuse. Like, and you know, I even went back to the previous issue of Marvel 2-in-1, which is the comic that this issue is in, and like he defeats the Sinister Six with the help of Johnny Storm, and then is just like, okay, there's this spaceship, I gotta stop the spaceship, and get stuck on the spaceship, with the Hulk, and then the Hulk disappears. It's very strange. Like you said, very ham-fisted way to do that. But they end up on the moon, and there's this guy called the Stranger who is after, and he's just a giant in like a bright red Roman robe. I don't know. And then he's after the soul gem on Adam's forehead. And then there's this other guy on the moon called the Gardener.
You mean Space Moses? Yes.
Space Moses. Okay. I thought the exact same. I called him Space Jesus, and then I was like, no, white hair. It's Moses.
Yeah.
And he is like tending a garden on the moon and ends up helping Spider-Man and Adam Warlock defeat this stranger. And man, it's not very good.
Yeah. Cause then the question you ask is then what next? Like, where do you go with this?
Yeah. And they do bring it up a little bit. And they come back to this a little bit, but overall this issue was just completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
So the next thing we're going to get into is the Avengers. Was it an annual?
It was Avengers Annual number 7.
Right. And this is where, like you said, Adam getting back to Earth really starts coming into play. The Avengers assemble at the mansion. And if I'm I had to skim this one and I hadn't read it in about a week. If I recall correctly, they don't really know why they assembled. They all just wanted to kind of had a feeling they should be there.
Well, I mean, you got the beginning where he's found Gamora. And,
right.
She looks none the worse for wear. Like she's in bad shape. And she, mm-hmm. she tells him, hey, Thanos is coming. And she warns him, and he, just decides that, I think in that moment, he kind of finds purpose, but it's something that just, in my opinion, could have been built on in the previous, issues.
Yeah, they could have really done without some of the other stuff and played more on the Gamora, the relationship between Gamora and Pip and Adam, and they are really they're kind of painted as like a three musketeers, like good friends because of their adventure, but that's not really explicit in the comics,
right? And they have been basically shown and developed as the precursor to the modern day Guardians, mm-hmm. just that whole relationship. And yeah, it is something that should have been the beginning of it. I think it should have been something along the lines of, they get a distress call from her and they both go. But again, my only real misgiving is that, this is all of a sudden now he has purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. And he is broken up about this. We talked earlier about how he's very, very vocal about how he's failed to protect his friends, failed to protect his allies. His friends have died as a result. And now here's Gamora severely injured and dying as a result of, him not taking care of Thanos while he had the chance. And yeah, and then we get some, you know, the Avengers assembling. I gotta say, I really like the way Beast is written in this. I've never really read the Avengers where Beast was on the team, but I like the way he's done in this.
Well, see, I remember those issues when he was on the team, and I always liked him because I like the fact that, like, Beast was actually my favorite X-Man. He was my favorite character because he was the smart guy, you know. And it was nice to see him as an Avenger, because I liked the fact that, okay, even though the X-Men were kind of isolated based on, you know, the fact that they're mutants. I like the fact that, you know, the Marvel heroes reached out to Beast to become a member. So that always kind of endeared his presence in the Avengers to me.
And I think the way he's written, he seems to enjoy himself in a way that members of the Avengers seem to regularly do, and members of the X-Men so rarely get a chance to.
Yeah, I think it is one of those moments where, you know, yeah, I'm a mutant, but I'm at that point where no one's defining me as one. I'm an Avenger.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that works really well. Yeah. And so the Avengers assemble at the mansion, along with part-time Avenger Moondragon, who has, she's a cosmic, a celestial Madonna, right? She has like a cosmic awareness.
Yeah.
And then, also Captain Marvel, is there, the original Captain Marvel, Mar-Vell of the Kree. Yeah. And they assemble, and all of a sudden Moondragon is like, okay, now I realize why we're here. And she has this vision, and I think it's when Thanos' fleet kind of comes out and is attacking the Earth yet again. They've just dealt with this like a few years before in comics, probably like a few months in, you know, in-universe time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought it was, you know, not knowing, like, if you don't know a lot about Adam Warlock, you do kind of, there are like the little moments that are kind of a little, you know, iffy on him as a character. So I like the fact that when he arrives, he's confronted by Thor, because, you know, he did kidnap Jane Foster with the intention of mating with her. So
I totally forgot about that the second, I remembered it when I originally read this about a month ago, but I totally forgot about it reading through for this time again, and I'm glad you reminded me of that, because that was ridiculous.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, he's going to be embraced as a hero by everyone, so that works for me.
And I do like the way that, because you always picture these cosmic beings as being so powerful. And, you know, Adam Warlock is pretty much meant to be the anti-Thanos. So not quite on Thanos' level, but right there. And I think the way Moondragon talks about him, and Captain Marvel as well, and even Tony Stark, they're like, yeah, okay, this guy is the real deal, like, Thor, chill.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they explain, and this is a really cool scene, because they kind of explain what Thanos is up to, and they explain about the six Infinity Gems. They don't call them the Infinity Gems in this, they call them the six Soul Gems.
Yeah.
But this is pretty much the origin of the Infinity Gems, and what Thanos is after is he's got five of them already, and he's, like, combined them into one super gem, and if he's able to take Adam's, you know, sixth gem and get them all, he'll gain that ultimate power that he's after. And the Avengers know you don't want Thanos to have ultimate power. So they're like, oh, this isn't good. And then ready to get going, they get a distress call and be like, hey, there's a whole fleet of alien ships on their way to Earth. And then the Avengers go into space battle mode, and it's really cool.
Yeah, that part is cool. So the only thing I'm going to just kind of, you know, go back to is...
Oh, go ahead.
Is, I mean, yeah, they show how he acquires the gems, but we are led to believe that these incredibly powerful gems One, he stole from the Stranger, who was defeated by Spider-Man, of all people.
Right.
And then one was apparently just abandoned by Space Moses. Like, the gardener just kind of left it.
Okay, no, they did explain that. That did happen. I do remember seeing that happen in that Spider-Man issue.
Yeah.
It wasn't well explained, but basically in order to help Warlock and Spidey deal with the Stranger, Space Moses had to like abandon that soul gem or something. That is partially why that, but yeah, like if you hadn't read that team up, and there's no like editorial notes in this book that like indicate that you should have read it. Like, the only reason I knew to read it is because it was on Comic Book Herald's like reading order for this event.
Yeah.
You would have been like, okay, so he fought a monster for one of these gems, and he found one like by a defeated space giant. That's cool. But one was just laying around? Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so apparently Thanos was able to obtain the other five gems reasonably with some reasonable ease. But yeah, then the Avengers attack Thanos' space fleet, and it's really cool. But meanwhile, Thanos has got one other ship, and Thanos' main ship is kind of cruising around the other way, and he wants to destroy the Earth, because that will somehow... He's going to, like, destroy the sun, which will destroy the Earth, and that is going to sap some of Adam's power so he can steal Adam's soul gem, if I've got that right.
Yeah, you do, and I mean, as convoluted as it is, yes.
they make it work. They make it sound less strange than I just did. But yeah, they and one other thing that happens in the midst of all this is that Pip the Troll is like on Thanos's his what do you call it home his mothership, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Warlock and Captain Marvel realize that, oh, wait, hold on, this might be some kind of a distraction with the help of Moondragon. And they're like, okay, let's go actually take out Thanos' ship. And so they do, and Adam gets there, and they find, what is it, like a statue of Pip the Troll there.
Well, they basically find Pip, like, lobotomized.
Exactly, yeah. Like, that's what I meant when I said statue. Yeah, he's dead, pretty much. And this really throws Adam like back into his expositional depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we've got and what Adam does is he sees Pip like lobotomized, and he's like, wait a minute, I can at least save part of him, and he uses his soul gem, and what the soul gem has been doing is stealing the souls of his enemies when he can't beat them in battle. And so he takes Pip's soul so that he can, you know, save it at least. And he had done the same thing for Gamora. And now all of a sudden Adam knows what Thanos's plan is. And so he goes after the distraction ship with Thanos on with the big soul gem. And there's this big confrontation between Adam and Thanos. And I think it's pretty well done.
Yeah, I actually like that. I like that fight a lot, because it is like almost the culmination of his purpose, and both sides are kind of equal in their philosophy, and both right in the fact that, you know, yeah, you can't, he tells him, you know, you can't stop death. Like it's inevitable, but at the same time, just the fighting against it is noble in and of itself.
Yeah, and I think Thanos realizes that he basically has to take advantage of Adam Warlock's depression, because yes, death is inevitable, but that fight against it is what really will drag down his purpose, and so he really has to kind of exacerbate Adam's depression as much as he can. Yelling at him about how he can't save anybody and death is inevitable and fighting off Avengers as he goes.
Mm-hmm.
But he is able to, with the Avengers' help, he is able to kind of fight off Thanos and stop his ship. They destroy the giant soul gem. But we see right here the other side of the death of Captain the death of Adam Warlock that we had seen earlier in the climax of the first arc. And it's really cool the way they do that. So Thanos is kind of defeated, but Adam has been knocked out, and the Soul Gem is taking him over, and Thanos is able to pretty much not quite kill Adam Warlock, but he's dying at the end of this fight. And when he does, the other Adam Warlock from the past shows up, and we saw this from the other Adam Warlock's perspective at the end of the first arc. And I think they're able to do, it's the same scene, but between the art and the way the focus is on the older Adam Warlock in this one and not the younger one as it was previously. Mm. And also Captain Marvel is there watching and, you know, obviously very confused. I think they're able to really sell it as a separate scene as than the first time.
Well, yeah, and I'm with you on that as well. And actually, and there is a really satisfactory resolution to the overall issue. Like it's sad, but at the same time, it's satisfactory. Like it's like, okay, if that's how that's going to end, that makes sense.
Yeah, and we see, and I love this because. Because if you remember in the climactic scene of the first arc, past Adam steals future Adam's like soul with the Soul Gem, and that's how he's able to counteract the whole Magus timeline. Mm-hmm. And so we see Captain Marvel trying to explain to the other Avengers how Adam Warlock died, and he's like, I'm not sure I can even explain this. But in between each panel, and it's a regular 9-panel layout, so we've got on the top three, we've got Avengers, Adam, and then Avengers. The middle one, we've got Adam, Avengers, Adam. The bottom one, Avengers, Adam. And in the middle, interspersed with these Avengers talking about, okay, this space battle is, you know, it looks like we've at least, you know, got them on the ropes. But in the middle of this, we've got Adam Warlock. Wow, I'm still alive. Where am I? And he sees Gamora and Pip there. And he's like, you're in the Soul Gem. You're at peace. This is what happens when you're in the Soul Gem. And not only that, but he also sees his enemies there. Yeah. All the ones he sees. I see the judge there from his trial.
Yeah.
And yeah, all his enemies are there and they're just waving to him like, hey, this is where we're at peace. We're cool here. And Adam, we get Adam like, yes, it's true. At last I can feel them, all the souls of the people I stole. And he was really depressed about having to steal these souls like the entire time.
Yeah. And I agree with you. It's, I like that part. I like the fact that if they were going to give him some kind of peace, that they were able to do so in that moment. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, you know, even with a lot of the hokey campiness, you do care about Adam as a character. So you do kind of want to see how his story and journey progress. And they did it well in that regard. Like now, the next one's, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I was curious how you were, how you felt about this like epilogue, this Marvel 2-in-1 annual then. Because I thought that was a pretty satisfactory ending to this arc in the last mm-hmm. issue.
Yep. Should have left it there. But again, why Spider-Man?
I don't know. At that point, it's just it has to be that Spider-Man is just the top seller. Yeah. Like issues with Spider-Man sell. So somehow, we get one more issue, and somehow the Avengers have all been captured by Thanos, who I was under the impression had been reasonably defeated in the last issue.
Right. Exactly.
But the Avengers are all in stasis. In like this stasis pod by Thanos, including Thor, and they like make a big deal about how he's even captured Thor, and Moondragon is able to get a psychic message to Spider-Man. And Spider-Man then teams up with the Thing because the Thing has a spaceship because he's part of the Fantastic Four.
Right.
And they fly up to deal with Thanos. The best parts of this, I think, are A, Lord Chaos and Master Order, like the giant space faces.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy these cosmic entities. Like I was saying, how they weren't necessarily the most well thought out when they were created, but I really do enjoy reading about them. And how they're kind of looking at this as a big cosmic chess game.
Yeah.
I always appreciate that imagery. And then I do like the conversation or the dynamic between Spider-Man and the Thing, where Spider-Man goes to the Baxter Building and the Thing just like is just ripping on him until Spider-Man finally yells, "Shut up." It's like, I got to go to space, man. Come on.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Any other two characters I probably would have enjoyed. Like if you left the Thing, if it were the Thing and Johnny Storm, if it were the Thing and the Human Torch, that I could have dealt with more. But it took me almost immediately out of it when, okay, when Moondragon couldn't reach out to anyone, but reaches out to Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, like, I mean, it is kind of early 70s. Maybe there wasn't a whole lot left. Like, I personally would have gone with Dr. Doom. Like, yeah. I don't know. I always go with Dr. Doom, so.
Well, see, I'm with you. I think it's the fact that, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's because, hey, it's Spider-Man. Spider-Man's pretty much our go-to character. He's our, you know, he's our mascot.
That's so awesome. But yeah, we get some pretty cool fight scenes with Spider-Man and the Thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fighting off Thanos' hordes. And then again, we get more of the imagery with Chaos and Order. And they're like, we need our champion of life. And basically, this whole issue boils down to freeing the Avengers and having them fight off Thanos long enough to resurrect Adam Warlock for a few minutes. So that they can, so that Adam Warlock can actually defeat Thanos.
Yeah, but again, then the question becomes, well, why couldn't he have done that when he was alive? Like, you know.
Yeah, and maybe you get some of the within the Soul Gem power, but honestly, you could have cut out a lot of this stuff and just had that happen. Just had this fall because this is basically the falling action for the whole arc because there wasn't really much falling action in the previous issue. So, you know, you really don't need most of this. You were in an Avengers annual. You could have had this whole Avengers versus Thanos scene. Yep. As a couple of page epilogue to the other one. Add a few pages to it. Make it an oversized issue.
Mm-hmm.
It was an annual. Make it an extra 5 pages. Like, no big deal.
Exactly. Not like there was a whole lot of rules for an annual.
Right. And so, yeah, we get eventually Spider-Man is able to, while he frees the Avengers and the Thing are able to hold Thanos off long enough for Spider-Man to resurrect Adam Warlock for a couple of minutes. And Adam Warlock, with the new power he's gained from being within the Soul Gem, basically turns Thanos into a stone statue.
Yeah.
And then there's a memorial for Gamora, Pip, and Adam Warlock, primarily Adam Warlock. Mm. And I think, you know, this is a good couple of pages. I don't dislike it. And I really like the narration at the end and the image of Thanos as a statue with a tear going down his cheek. But overall, yeah, this issue didn't need to happen.
Yeah. I said, and if it did need to happen, it just needed to happen with characters that would have made sense. Like, again, Thing, absolutely fine. Thing and Reed Richards, Thing and Johnny, just characters who have a purpose or who have had a purpose in outer space would have made more sense to me than just kind of throwing Spider-Man in there, which looked good, but just seemed like a distraction from the overall story.
Exactly. Why bring Spider-Man to space two times in a couple of issues? It's Spider-Man's not a space guy.
Right. And it just seemed to me like it was a lack in confidence in the story.
Yeah.
So let's throw in a gimmick, and that gimmick was Spider-Man.
And you know, it might have made sense, you know, like financially. Like, I don't know. I know the Avengers wasn't exactly a flagship in this era, and it might have made sense. Like, hey, let's turn these annuals into a big arc and get Spider-Man involved.
Mm-hmm.
We can sell more of them. But even Spider-Man doesn't have any confidence in this. He's like, yeah, in this zero gravity, my web shooters are pretty much useless. Like, I'm not a good space fighter.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Like, yes, Spider-Man, you are, in fact, pretty much useless.
But, yeah, he ends up being useful as a hero. And I think the stuff with Lord Chaos and Master Order does work really well. Mm-hmm. The big cosmic entities and the final couple of pages with the memorial service are well done. But I think you could have included that in the Avengers annual, like we'd said. That didn't need to be a whole separate issue. I mean, it was an extra, 60 cents looking at the cover of this.
Yep.
So I'm sure it was an extra 60 cents for Marvel.
And I'm sure that was the point.
Yeah, the whole point. Exactly. But, that brings us to the end of the Warlock War, story arc. How did you like it overall?
Overall, like I said, from a nostalgia perspective, I liked it. I think because I'm older now, I look at things critically. I think besides the absurdity and the exposition, I think it still works as a story overall.
Yeah. I think the pacing was definitely an issue, and some of that is definitely the exposition. The exposition is wordy. There's one page like toward the end of the first arc where there's only art on like the right third of the page.
Yeah.
And then it's just a straight up wall of text going down the left two thirds.
Oh yeah. There are pages where the actual art is so small because it's just enveloped by text on the top and the bottom of each panel.
Yeah, and that does take away from it. And that it does cause pacing issues, but the story overall and the way it worked, I think was really, really well done. I think there was a lot of fill-in to make it longer, like way back at the beginning when Adam was on the prison ship, there was a good 8 pages in the middle of one of those issues where the prisoners wanted Adam to lead them, but Adam didn't want to be the leader, so the prisoners tried to kill him, and then he went on and took the prison ship by himself. Like, the whole prisoners turning on him thing was resolved in a few pages. Like, that didn't need to be a thing, but it did add, you know, it added panels.
Yeah, and it did. And even the caveman story he tells them was, like, I mean,
that was 3 pages in itself.
Right. It didn't need to be, but, you know.
There were a few things we skipped over that I really did like, that mini stories within the story. There was the whole history of how Magus became Magus.
Yeah.
He came out of his cocoon and on the homeworld, and the people were superstitious, so they thought he was a demon and attacked him, and he fought them off and like acted like he was a demon, and eventually they made him his god and he set out to conquer the universe. That was a really cool like 7 pages, but it was 7 pages with a lot of exposition.
Yeah.
So it like I said, it made pacing issues a thing, but it also really did work as its own like self-contained mini story.
Yeah, and a lot of comics from that time kind of fell into that trap. It was like, you know, tell but not show, when it should have been the opposite. You know?
Yeah, and at least they didn't do the thing a lot where they describe what's happening in the art. Like, we can see it.
Exactly.
But I yeah, overall, I really, really enjoyed reading this. On a scale of, you know, current comics and like how I would currently view the storytelling, I would give it a solid 7.5 out of 10. It would have been much higher without the pacing issues and too much exposition. Given the way, because pacing issues and too much exposition was the standard of the time, you know, this at the time, this would have been a 10 out of 10 comic.
Yeah. I'd say, and I'd say like my rating on this would probably be a little bit less generous. I'd probably give it like maybe a 6, 6.5. Okay. The overall story works. The overall ideas work. I think there were a lot of, like, even taking the exposition out of it, the exposition and the pacing issues out of it, I think there were just a lot of things that didn't.
You still had clowns.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, the clowns, I'm not even grading on a curve with the clowns. I think there was just stuff that, you know, just didn't really need to be. And yeah. could have been trimmed. I think a lot could have been trimmed and told a much more coherent story.
A much more streamlined version. I'd almost want to see, like, you know how Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale do those like the color issues, like the Hulk gray and the Daredevil yellow and stuff. Yeah. I would almost like to see like a modern retelling of this story.
Yeah,
and I think it could be really, really excellent.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, that about brings us to the end. Darren, you want to tell us where we can find you and all your work online?
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, you can find me at all my stories and articles and things like that. You can find either on Geeks Worldwide at thegww.com or on my website, superpoweredfancast.com, all one word. You can email me at superpoweredfancast@gmail.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Superpowered Fan.
Thank you so much for being on the show, man. I really appreciate it. Our music is done by Speed Force Music. You can find that on SoundCloud at Speed Force Music, as well as on iTunes. You can also follow the creator of Speed Force Music. It's Mike Schmidt. I should have his Twitter handle ready. He's Mike Schmidt, I believe it's 08 on Twitter. But yeah, his music is great. I turn on his playlist a lot when I'm reading comics. It really adds a lot. He does all sorts of great stuff with like theme music and whatnot. Really go check that out. This podcast, Comics in Space, is part of the Comic Noobs Network. You can find all our shows on thegww.com, as well as on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and your podcast app of choice. It's recorded in South Bend, Indiana. And where are you at, Darren?
I'm in Birmingham, Alabama.
South Bend, Indiana, and Birmingham, Alabama for this episode. It is produced by Steven Veldman. He'll be doing some of the editing on this. And you can catch our regular show on Sundays, where we do a similar thing to this, except with the on Earth Marvel stuff. We're currently going through the Dark Reign storyline, where Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, has taken control of S.H.I.E.L.D. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. We'll be doing it monthly. I really enjoyed it, and I'm loving getting into more Marvel Cosmic. Just if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at Comic Noobs Show. We love interacting with fans and you know, we talk to everybody who tweets at us. We're also on Facebook. You can just facebook.com/comicnoobsshow. And once again, you can find us on the awesome website, thegww.com. Follow them for all sorts of awesome content. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I really enjoyed this, and hope you did as well.
All right. Awesome.